They could not book passage to Caladan for 3 days. Pacing the floor inside the fine guest quarters that Governor Keogh had provided, Duke Leto frowned at the printed transport schedule, then set it aside on a plaz-topped side table. We won't be leaving Balut as soon as I'd hoped. Paul was not disappointed in the least. Once home on Caladan, he would go back to being trained as a Landsrod nobleman, and Bronso would return to the technocracy on Ix, their carefree days over. That means we'll be here for the performance. You can see the jongleurs in action. Their face dancers are unlike anything you've... I have no interest in acrobats or shapeshifters. For more than a day, Leto had maintained a veneer of displeasure at what Paul had done, though the Duke could not entirely hide his deep-seated relief. Paul had admitted his culpability and apologized, though he could not deny the sense of honor he felt towards safeguarding Bronso. He had explained why he'd felt it necessary to stay with Romber's son, no matter what. Now, he faced his father with a growing sense of confidence. "Sir, you sent me away to learn. Before that, you taught me about politics and leadership, while Thufir, Duncan, and Gurney showed me how to fight and defend myself. Rainvar's troops showed us how to affect great crowds, how to enhance emotions and reactions. Isn't that useful knowledge for a duke to have?" "You mean you learned how to trick and manipulate people?" Paul lowered his eyes, careful not to argue. "I believe there is a place for charismatic elocution in statecraft, sir." Jessica interceded in a carefully controlled tone of voice. "The Bene Gesserit teach those things as well. Paul will face unexpected dangers and crises when he becomes duke. Why object to any skill that might save him? He has the tools to use. Now, trust that he also has the honor and moral underpinnings to know when and when not to use them." Leto remained stiff, didn't reply. Later that afternoon, Romber Vernius came to the doorway to speak on Paul's behalf. The cyborg prince knew full well that Bronso was the one who had instigated the brash flight from Ix. "I should have been there to protect the boys, Leto, even after what happened to Tessia. Paul did the honorable thing. I beg you, don't punish him. Without his courage, Bronso might very well be lost or dead." Finally, Leto's sternness melted like frost on one of the castle windows on an autumn morning. He was forced to admit, "I did make Paul swear to watch over your son." Nevertheless, the Duke was not quick to forget, and would not let his son forget either. When the Balut governor invited them all to a banquet on the night before the scheduled jongleur performance, Leto told Paul to take his meal alone and ponder the consequences of his foolish, short-sighted decision, no matter his good intentions toward Bronso Vernius. Left by himself in their guest quarters, Paul considered how hard Rainvar's troop must be scrambling to assemble the rest of the stage and the complex special effects mechanisms inside the Theater of Shards. The performers would be rehearsing repeatedly. Paul longed to be out there helping them. But something troubled him. He had not told his parents that there were face dancer assassins in the jongleur troupe. It was the sort of problem that he wished would just go away, because if he explained, his father would be even more upset with him and more critical of him. Paul didn't know how to phrase it, but knew he would have to find a way. Endorsing necessary assassinations was certainly not a House Atreides ideal. A liveried Balut servant appeared at the doorway bearing a tray of dishes prepared by the governor's finest chefs. The rich aromas wafting up from the covered plates made Paul's stomach rumble. The servant placed the tray on a table and removed the coverings with a showman's flourish. Paul thanked him distractedly, and the man straightened, meeting his gaze. "Don't thank me yet. Instantly on his guard, Paul watched the plain features on the servant's face shift and revert to another familiar form. Cielto? You may call me that. Paul didn't press him for a more definite answer. What brings you here? Is Reynvar all right?
Delivering a cautionary note is strictly against protocol, but...
The face dancer shrugged.
I decided to make an exception in this case, since I already chose to get involved, to interfere, when I informed the Waku of your identity and whereabouts. That is how your family knew to come to Balut.
You did that? Why?
Because you two boys dabble in this life, but do not belong here. You and your companion will both achieve great things, but not if you remain with a traveling jongleur troupe.
Paul frowned. I'm not sure why you're telling me this.
Even a play may hold more drama than meets the eye.
A play? You mean the performance tomorrow, or...
Everything is part of the performance, and no one has the complete script.
A cautionary note? More drama than meets the eye? Is someone in danger?
Everyone is in danger, young man, every day. Danger can come from anywhere and strike anyone. It can come in any form or package.
Just remain vigilant, young friend, even though you are not in the script. Cielto's features resumed the appearance of a Balut servant, and he left without another word, though Paul had many more questions. Cielto's cryptic words didn't rise quite to the level of a warning. To Paul, it sounded more philosophical. But Cielto had not come merely to philosophize with Paul. Something more had to be there. A script. Did that mean a plot? Alone in his room, the young man looked at food that no longer tempted him. Thufir Hawat had told him never to lower his guard, and that habit had become second nature to Paul. He couldn't imagine how much more security Governor Keogh could mount. Even without specifics, he decided he would have to tell his father, though he did not look forward to the conversation.
While an audience is captivated by the show, they must ask themselves, at whose expense is the entertainment derived? Reynvar the Magnificent. When the Grand Jongleur performance began inside the Theater of Shards, Paul was awash with emotions. Just a few days ago, he had expected to be part of this show behind the scenes, a nameless roustabout. Now he found himself with his family high above the stage in a private balcony box, the son of a Landsraad nobleman occupying one of the best seats in the house, at the insistence of Governor Keogh. He fidgeted on the governor's balcony, feeling like an outsider. Beside him, his father sat in a formal black jacket emblazoned with the Atreides hawk crest, while the governor had provided Paul with a similar dark jacket. Jessica looked lovely in a dark green gown spangled with ice diamonds, much like those that adorned the costume of Reynvar the Magnificent. After Paul had delivered the mysterious and non-specific warning from Cielto, revealing how the face dancers were sometimes involved in surreptitious assassinations, Duke Leto had scowled, then dispatched a message to Governor Keogh to increase her security precautions. But Leto had decided not to hide. There are always threats against us, Paul, and we can't let them prevent us from going out in public. As the old Duke used to tell me, if fear rules us, we don't deserve to rule. Paul had sat quietly in his room, the food hardly touched on the table, his stomach roiling. He hated to have his father, whom he admired greatly, disappointed in him.
I'll do better, sir. I promise.
See that you do. Duke Leto's features then softened. Besides, I wouldn't want to miss the performance that is so important to you. Remarkably, the Duke now looked fully at ease, afraid of nothing, which imparted similar feelings to Paul. When he and his family arrived at the theater, they immediately noticed the heightened security. Governor Keogh's red uniformed guards were on high alert, inspecting everyone who entered the premises, using scanners to search carefully for weapons, sending search teams into every corner of the building. Of course, Sielto and his face dancer cohorts were capable of looking like anyone, but at least Paul felt reassured that they would not be able to smuggle any weapons in. Below them in the panoramic performance arena, the vivacious jongleur leader bounded onto the stage as the lights rose, reflected, and were intensified into rainbows by the crystalline architecture. Rainvar's voice boomed across the chamber crowded with thousands of spectators. Every member of the audience is our friend. We welcome you all to celebrate Governor Keogh's recent betrothal to Praeto Heron. He raised his arms to draw the onlookers' attention, as if he were a dominant source of gravity. From her tall seat in the center of the special balcony, Alra Keogh rose regally to her feet. She wore a tiara of gold threads over her dark hair, and her gown sparkled with thin folds of woven glass. She extended her left hand to take Praeto's, raising the muscular young artist to his feet beside her. Her bow showed youthful enthusiasm, as well as a hint of shyness as he bowed to the vast crowds. When the audience applauded, Paul sensed that the cheering was not as exuberant as it should be. Governor Keogh studiously did not show that she noticed anything amiss, but entire sections of the stands sounded muted. Paul could not stop thinking about Sielto's odd comments. The face dancer's attuned senses would have alerted them to the disputes brewing in the local noble circles. Had they been hired to perform another necessary assassination? Or was there a different danger? Earl Romber Vernius sat on the governor's right in a reinforced seat. Formal robes of state and a loose sash covered the most obvious prosthetics, but his scars could not be hidden. The motors that drove his body hummed with well-contained power. Attentive to his long-term patient, Dr. Wellington Ewey had a seat at the rear of the box, from which he could watch Romber more easily, albeit with a diminished view of the performance. Next to the Earl and across the balcony from Paul, Bronso eagerly waited for the performers to take the stage. He seemed fascinated by the illusory stage dressings and the dazzling lights he had helped to install. Searching for subtleties of expression and body language, which his mother had taught him to identify, Paul could tell that Bronso and his father were both exhausted. Though he had not been privy to their discussions, Paul could imagine how drained they must both feel. Their father-son relationship had become a hurricane, the bonds spun and torn and then reassembled into a fragile construction that only time could strengthen. After a glance at Paul, the red-headed boy looked away in apparent embarrassment and shame. Romber seemed more upset with Bronso because he had placed Duke Leto's son in danger than because of the foolish risks the boy had taken for himself. After the jongleur leader finished his announcement, the face dancer performers ran onto the exhibition platform in enormous frilly costumes, ridiculous exaggerations of noble fashions, with hairdos that stood half again as tall as each wearer, and open-mouthed sleeves voluminous enough to swaddle babies. The air shimmered, and the holosets solidified, creating a translucent illusion through which the bright reflections of crystalline facets penetrated. A mist generator spewed clouds of billowy fog into the upper portion of the arena to simulate thunderclouds. Strobes and lasers flashed, ricocheting reflective lightning bolts from the mirrors into a beautiful tapestry of light. In a booming voice, Rainvar bellowed to his performers, "What are you waiting for? On with the show!"